KTY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here today on VCY America for a very critical topic, a very critical program today. Ladies and gentlemen, this past Monday, in a 6-3 opinion, the United States Supreme Court has redefined the word sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity, and thus impacting businesses across the nation. According to our guest today, he said that the majority opinion departs from the clear language of Title VII and is no less than legislation from the bench. So how will this impact women's shelters? What about schools? What about businesses? What does this mean for the church and Christian ministries? Joining us today, we welcome back constitutional attorney Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt has argued before all levels of court, including landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. He's an author of several books, speaker on the radio programs Faith and Freedom and Freedom's Call. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
If you would, let's begin just by unfolding for us. These cases were argued many, many months back, but just give us a brief synopsis of there are a trio of cases here of which the justices heard, and then they released their opinion. So separate these cases for us, and let's look at what the court decided here.
Yeah, there are three cases. They were decided on the same day, consolidated, but they were argued and briefed separately. So we have two cases involving sexual orientation. The first is the Altitude Express, and that was a skydiver instruction who was homosexual. When he strapped himself on or was about ready to strap himself on to a woman who was going through the skydiving, and he was the instructor and so forth, he mentioned something about, don't worry because he's homosexual. That was obviously offensive. That person was eventually fired. That case went up to the Supreme Court. The other one was Bostic versus Clayton County, Georgia. That was a counselor, and that individual also came out as homosexual, and the Clayton County people ultimately fired him for reasons related to that and how that would impact his work and the counseling that he was doing. And the third case was the Harris Funeral Homes case, and that's the case where a person worked with the funeral home. And then he told his employer that he was going to take some time off from work, and he was going to return as a man or as a woman. He was a biological man, and he was going through hormone treatments, and eventually he was going to get surgery, and he's going to return as a woman. And the owner of the funeral home said that's going to be really problematic because it's going to inject something that is unpleasant, controversial, disrupting into the somber, counseling, comforting environment that is a funeral home, and he worked directly with the grieving people that came. So this man was terminated. By the time it gets to the Supreme Court and eventually for this decision, two of the three plaintiffs had died. One of them, the homosexual and the transgender person, they passed away. But the cases continued. Earlier this year, the court said that they would allow the estates to move in the place. Here's the issue. Both of them, we had three up until 2017, kind of give you the landscape. We had the first 10 courts of appeals that ever addressed this issue, and that is this, whether the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Title VII, regarding employment non-discrimination, that includes the word sex, you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, whether that includes or should be interpreted to include sexual orientation and gender identity. 10 courts of appeal, 10 of them, consistently, one after another, said no. It's pretty obvious. It only applies to biology, male and female. Finally, in 2017, a court of appeal went the wrong way, and it's one of these cases that ended up before the Supreme Court. And so one of the court of appeals in this case went the right way, consistent with all the other previous 10, and two of them went the other way. And that is what caused the conflict, and that's how it got to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so the real issue was just a statutory interpretation. Does the 1964 law that says you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, does that include sexual orientation and gender identity? And the majority opinion, 6-3, with Gorsuch unbelievably writing the majority opinion, said that they will interpret it to be so. And they have therefore amended judicially the 1964 law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what they also said. In 1964, it's very clear that this only applies to male and female, not to anything else. That the drafters never conceived that it would include sexual orientation or gender identity. And that there had been multiple times for multiple decades by Congress to amend, first to include sexual orientation and then later gender identity, into that same law, to actually add it as another category. And time after time after time, decade after decade, they were not successful in getting a law passed to amend in both houses. So Congress has had decades where there has been a clear intent that they don't want to amend it, that they have refused. They haven't been able to get the votes in both houses to amend it, even though there's been probably 3+ decades of attempts to do so. Pretty clear. Should be the end of the story, but not for this court. And so that's where this decision comes down. They literally wrote into the statute what the drafters, they admit, did not put in it, what the previous courts of appeal understood, plus additionally 30 judges that had ruled on it, found that it was pretty clear it only applies to male and female, not sexual orientation or gender identity, and what Congress for 3+ decades have refused to amend, even though they've been given the opportunity to do it. Now, on Monday, you have 6 unelected individuals acting as super legislature that ultimately amend the statute and make it say, in their interpretation, that it should include sexual orientation and gender identity. The implications are huge.
Yeah, they are huge. And, Matt, I mean, here they are recognizing that, but yet they made this decision anyways. I mean, it's like doublespeak. It's the ultimate hypocrisy. It's the ultimate denial of the separation of powers.
No, it's the ultimate denial of the separation of powers. And, in fact, that's exactly what the dissent says with Justices Alito and others, but Alito was very, very strong. He wrote a very lengthy dissent full of information, and he begins with that very same thing, that what is happening here is that the judges have literally rewritten the statute, and they have violated separation of powers. This is a job for the legislature, not for judges.
This, in essence, is the same thing Justice John Roberts did with Obamacare as well.
Exactly. And, in fact, you know, as Chief Justice John Roberts is negatively remembered for his flip-flop and literally rewriting a statute that was fairly clear on its face with the Obamacare decision in 2012, so Gorsuch is going to be forever remembered for this rewrite of a very clear statute. You can't get any more clear when they actually admit in the decision that it meant, and they're even assuming that even now that it means male and female and nothing else. And notwithstanding, they go down this road. And it is very disturbing because it really upsets the rule of law. I mean, Alito says this. He begins his dissent by saying, there's only one word for what the court has done today, legislation. The document that the court releases is in the form of a judicial opinion interpreting a statute, but that is deceptive. And he goes on to say that last year, you know, the House of Representatives passed a bill, and he goes on to go over all these different attempts to try to pass the same thing that the court just did, and they have failed repeatedly and repeatedly. So he says, to date, none of these attempts, in fact, he says for 45 years, listen to this, for the past 45 years, the bills have been introduced in Congress to add sexual orientation to the list, and in recent years, bills have included gender identity as well. But to date, none has passed both houses. We're talking about 4.5 decades. 4.5 decades this has been attempted.
So what is the rationalization of a Gorsuch and a Roberts to just totally nullify then the original intent of Title VII? And to inject their own interpretation and expansion of it.
Well, you know, they come up with their own reasoning, but it really doesn't have any basis in the law or in logic as well. They come up with, and they use all the different language of the LGBT agenda uses. In fact, even in the case with the transgender person, the male in the funeral home case, Gorsuch refers to that person as a she. And obviously it's indisputable that individual, for, you know, decades has been and was born as a male.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really goes into this, you know, just convoluted attempt to get around the clear meaning of the statutes. This is not judicial restraint. This is judicial activism. This is Gorsuch, and it is the other five, which includes Roberts. Not unexpected for some of the other four, but this is judicial activism, mm-hmm. legislating from the bench. I thought it would be a 5-4 decision. In fact, even after the argument in October of last year when the case was argued early in the term, I thought it would be 5-4 to actually win the case, at least 5-4 to win the case. That's how the arguments went. But obviously something happened between the arguments and now, and Roberts did it again, unfortunately, mm-hmm. rewriting a statute. But what's worse is Gorsuch did it too.
Yeah.
And I think he might well have been influenced. I remember one of the questions that I raised back when he was going through the nomination, and the people that were working closely with him tried to pass it off as though, well, it's, you know, no big deal. But he attended, back then, and I'm sure he still does, a very liberal, pro-LGBT Episcopalian church. That church had engaged in a lot of pro-LGBT events. I think what he did is the people that he associates with, or the church he associates with, he allowed that to color his ultimate judicial interpretation, because this by far is not, this is not interpretation. This is a rewriting of statute.
Well, and I think with Justice Alito, I mean, he called this a brazen abuse of the court's authority.
Yeah, it very much is a brazen abuse. If you read Justice, I mean, this is a 172-page opinion with everybody's opinion, and that includes the majority opinion and Alito's very lengthy opinion with lots and lots of information from dictionaries, from other different kinds of things that he added in addition to his statement, and then the separate opinion by Justice Kavanaugh dissenting as well.
Now, we're going to be looking, and soon we're a minute away from a break, but we're going to look at lots of implications in the next segment here, but is this something that's limited, Matt, to employers with just a certain number of employees?
Yeah, Title VII is the federal law, and it limits to people that have employers that have 15 or more over a period of certain time. So it, if you just bump up to 15 but then bump back down, it's not going to cover you. You have to have 15 for a certain period of time over a certain coverage period, depending upon when the incident of employment discrimination is alleged. So the smaller employers under 15, they're not going to be covered by this, but they're going to be covered by other state and local laws. Many of them, of course, are not going to have this in it, but here's what's going to ultimately happen, I think. Because of this decision, you're going to probably see amendments at the state and local. And some of these different local laws that are non-discrimination, they go down to as many as 3 to 5 people, mm-hmm. so it's a much smaller universe, and you have a state law claim rather than a federal law claim. So I think what we're going to see are those kinds of state and local laws, many of those will start to be amended to actually put in sexual orientation or gender identity if they're not already there.
Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Council. We're talking about the Supreme Court legislating in favorable LGBT opinion that was declared this past Monday. What are the implications for businesses? What are the implications for such things as women's shelters, shelters for battered women? What about churches? What about Christian organization? Has Pandora's box been opened? We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, evolutionists say that because our blood is similar to seawater, this proves the evolution of life in the ocean. Is this true?
Chris, it is true that evolution says that life evolved in the sea, but human blood is very different from seawater. Now, many of the same elements are in both, but the concentrations and compounds are very, very different. God used the building blocks he had created on day one to form all things. Human blood has unbearably complex molecules locked into complex combinations that are very different from anything ever found in seawater. In fact, seawater would break down the compounds that we have in our blood. Chris, we can be confident that man did not come from the sea. Man was created by the Creator, who also created the sea. We read all about it when we go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
is a 6-3 opinion handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court this past Monday. Indeed, as Justice Alito said, this is legislation. Legislating from the bench is what took place here, and a very favorable opinion to advance lesbian, gay, homosexual, bisexual, transgenderism here across the nation. Matt Staver is with us from Liberty Counsel. Justice Alito also had expressed concern, Matt, about this decision having far-reaching consequences. What's he referring to?
Yeah, he's referring to the public accommodations. He's referring to women's sports and whether you have to have restrooms and shower rooms, changing rooms where men are able to have free access to that. He's referring to all of those implications. And while this is only on the employment side of things, it's just a short jump over to the public accommodations because of the same 1964 Civil Rights Act also has a provision for public accommodations. And it has the same kind of language that Title VII has for employment. And consequently, it's just a matter of time before that's challenged under this particular case. And then you have, a free-for-all. Women's sports are going to be decimated. I mean, they're already being decimated in some of these situations where men are coming in and they're competing in the women's sport and taking over or just pounding them to death because of the additional strength and superiority of strength that they may exhibit, and really pushing back all the gains that women have been working so hard to gain for decades, and the equal opportunity to even compete in various sports within the college campuses and other campuses.
Matt, I know you're familiar with what's going on in Idaho. I mean, Idaho just had passed a state law stating girls' sports reserved for biological females. We've got the ACLU challenging that law. I mean, that's going to have impact upon
this. That's going to have an impact on it. And so what you're going to have are these men that can't make it in some of the men athletic competitions are going to switch over. Whether they're confused about their gender or not, they'll be able to switch over because it doesn't matter. If they say that they identify, you know, you're going to have to take them at their word. That's the problem. Unlike race, you know, where somebody obviously is a certain ethnicity or a certain race, this whole gender identity is all just a product of your mind. You don't even have to appear like the way that you say that you identify. It's just whatever you say. And to question that itself will be considered discrimination. So women's sports are going to be really decimated by this. And you're going to see these challenges using the same decision on the public accommodations. You'll see it in Title IX. Title IX, you know, is something that governs women's sports or sports within colleges and universities, and it allowed for equal opportunity. So if their college has a baseball team, they have to have some kind of a equivalent sport for the women. Well, a lot of women have been able to get college scholarships, go from high school to get a college scholarship, play on the women's team. Some of them have been able to go on to the Olympics. Some, like in the basketball, they've been able to go on to pro basketball and in many other sports as well. All of that's going to be really under challenge. And then when you look outside of, we can talk about the religious employers because there's a section in the opinion regarding that, and that's important. We want to get to it. But outside of the religious employers, and that would include religious schools, you're going to have, like for public schools, for example, when your football team and your cheerleaders go on, for example, a overnight stay someplace or any overnight trip, and you stay at a hotel. You usually have the guys on one side and the girls on another side, and you have separated between the sexes. Now, if you have a guy that's part of that and says, I want to be in the women's side, and not in a separate room, but bunking with a woman, bunking with another girl, you're not going to be able to stop that. That's going to be something else as soon as it gets kicked over to the public accommodations, and it's going to be just a matter of a short period of time before these challenges come. And or before certain amendments to these laws come as a result of this particular decision. So Matt, we're going to have a lot of problems come out of this.
We are. And this is in essence, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Supreme Court enacting ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, into law, brandishing it into law. Now, Matt, we've got two members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation. There's Senator Tammy Baldwin. She's an open lesbian. She sent out a tweet saying this is a huge step forward for LGBTQ equality. We must keep marching for full equality. And then we also have Congressman Mark Pocan, an open homosexual, who tweeted out, today's SCOTUS decision brings our LGBTQ community one step closer to equality. Equality. We've protected from workplace discrimination, but we must have more to defend, from housing to health care. We need equity in all. Passing the Equality Act would be a good next step. And I see this, Matt, and I said, who needs the Equality Act when you got an activist court that is putting into law, enshrining into law, the very things that Congress so far has denied?
Well, certainly what the Supreme Court did is legislate from the bench part of what's in the Equality Act, but not all of it in the Equality Act, because what the Equality Act does is a couple of things. One, it includes public accommodations as well, and a bunch of other federal laws as well. So it's a broader rewrite. Two, it actually expands the jurisdiction of the federal government so that any meeting of any sort becomes a public accommodation. There's no requirement as to the size. Even, you know, work at home from the computer online, that becomes something of a public accommodation, unbelievably. So it expands the government's reach from a federal standpoint to literally go into every corner of our lives. And the Equality Act also has a provision that would ban counseling for change. And it has a provision that would actually repeal the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which, you know, just to briefly mention that, the only bright side is that on pages 32 and 33 of the decision, the Supreme Court said that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or religious employers, would have two defenses to this. One, the First Amendment ministerial exception, and two, the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which they called a super statute that would literally supersede these requirements for religious employers. Now, one of the plaintiffs, one of the defendants, I guess I should say, in this case, which is the Harris Funeral Homes, that individual won on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in the lower district court, won, had that case briefed at the Court of Appeals, and lost at the Court of Appeals. But when they decided to ultimately ask the U.S. Supreme Court to review the case, they dropped, listen to this, they dropped the Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim. It's inexplicable. And had they continued it as they had done from the very beginning, they would have won on that particular claim, because it's very clear in pages 32 and 33 that RFRA would have protected Harris Funeral Homes from the application of this law.
Wow. Wow. Ball dropped there.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge wrong decision to drop the Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim at the U.S. Supreme Court. They would have been one of them that won. The other two, the private employer with the sexual orientation and the public employer with sexual orientation, still would have come out with the same result. But at least we would have a victory here for the religious employer, or people that have religious beliefs. Now what happened is the court said that this is how it applies, but there's no specific case that actually applies it. They just said, you know, they brought that in the lower court, but they dropped it, but we're just telling you in advance that you have a defense here. Now what's going to happen is some religious employer is going to have to go all the way back up to the Supreme Court to get that applied in a real live controversy case.
Matt, I'd like to talk about another aspect, and this is President Trump's reaction. And he said, I've read the decision, and some people were surprised, but they've ruled, and we live with their decision. That's what it's all about. We live with the decision of the Supreme Court. Very powerful decision, actually, but they have so ruled. Your response?
Yeah, I'm disappointed in how the president responded to that. And maybe he wasn't, hopefully, I don't know, briefed enough. I don't know. He says he read the decision. It's 172 pages. I don't know how much of it he read, but obviously he got the gist of it. But I don't think it was his best day in making that response. You know, I understand as where he was, he wanted to say, yeah, we live with it, because that's what happens with the Supreme Court. But you know what? The fact of the matter is, we need to stop saying we just live with whatever the Supreme Court says.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever the Supreme Court says is not always correct. And they're only going to be correct if they're, you know, ruling on the rule of law. We've had some really bad decisions in our history that the Supreme Court, you know, decided, and if you go back and you look at the whole rise of the Republican Party over slavery, you know, what did the Democrats say back then? The court's decided it. The battle is over. Forget about it. Go home. We have to live with it. That's what their mantra was. And the Republicans, led by Abraham Lincoln, said, no. No, we're not going to go. And we're going to have some pushback to it. And I think, you know, we need to start having more critical thinking about the role of the justices in the Supreme Court. We've done a lot of talking about it. But at the same time, if we just allow justices to do whatever they want to, and literally in a case like this, overrule the legislature and rewrite a legislative statute that the legislature has failed to amend over the past 45 years. 45 years.
Yeah.
They've refused to amend it, even though they've had these opportunities. Now we let six justices or unelected officials amend it and literally change the whole culture in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've lost the rule of law when that happens.
Yeah.
And if we just can't continue to accept that kind of response from the Supreme Court.
So we had President Trump's response, which was had a lot of lackluster to it. But looking at a couple of things, we did see President Trump overturn through the Department of Education the rule pertaining to sports and schools and so forth. And now there's also a Trump rule just announced pertaining to striking down former President Obama's transgender policy.
Right.
How will that be impacted by this? Because we've got the Human Rights Campaign saying we're going to file a lawsuit challenging this new Trump rule.
If you look at Trump's policies, he's been the strongest president in our history ever on religious freedom. He's been very strong, certainly in any of our lifetimes. His policies on religious freedom are, frankly, impeccable in that respect. And just last week, you know, he announced the rule regarding overruling the Obama transgender issue. Now, obviously, with this decision coming on Monday, I mean, he just did that last Thursday or Friday. That's going to be challenged. So from a policy standpoint, you know, sometimes when you're asked by the media to respond, you may not have been as much prepared, and certainly his statement could have been done a lot better and stronger had he been thinking more about the implications of it. But when you look at him from a policy standpoint, my goodness, he has done an enormous amount. And by the way, from a judge's standpoint, now, I know this might put a little bit of a damper on President Trump talking about judicial appointments, but if you look at what he's done in the judiciary, and I can tell you there's a huge difference between the judges that have been nominated by President Trump and any president before him. We've had the opportunity to appear before some of these judges, and the contrast between those judges and other judges are stark. He has selected judges that are consistent in their interpretation, for the most part, in the rule of law. I think in this particular case, Gorsuch has been a great justice. And that's the sad thing. He's been a great justice. He's been very solid on everything that he's written so far. I haven't disagreed with anything he's written so far that I can recall since he's been on the U.S. Supreme Court. Solid in every way. Great thinker. But here's the problem. His advocacy, his association, his world that he works in or goes to church in regarding LGBT has colored his ultimate decision in this case.
Wow. Folks, let's open our phone lines here today. Our telephone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Your reaction to the Supreme Court opinion, 800-733-9829. And right after the break, where do we go from here? You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Our society is being influenced by the entertainment media, and we don't even realize it. Why is it that many Christians entertain themselves by watching movies or programs that take God's name in vain or feature sensual activity on Saturday night and then go to church on Sunday to praise His name? That's the underlying message in the DVD Power of the Air by Dave Cristiano. This moving story features a missionary from Africa who warns that the church in America is being deceived and in great danger. A Christian that hears this message is convicted and makes a significant change in his life and sets out a plan to reach his city with the gospel. Watch this story unfold in the DVD Power of the Air, available now for a donation of $18, with additional copies available for a donation of just $10 more. Call 1-800-729-9829.
shocking opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court, 6-3, redefining the word sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity, even though they say it doesn't, but that's what they said it does. Just an amazing opinion that they issued. Matt Staver is with us today from Liberty Counsel. Just before we pick up our first call here, Matt, I just want to ask, so what are you, what is Liberty Counsel going to do in times like these? Are you now closing up your offices across the country and go finding some other line of work?
No, you know, I just actually shared with our office today, Exodus chapter 14. And, you know, at that point in time, Moses is leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. And he can't go backwards because the Egyptians are behind him. He can't go left or right because they're pinned in geographically by the different mountains and the structure of the landscape and also the different adversaries that they would run into. And they can't go forward, but that's where they're told to go. And that's because that's where the Red Sea is. And yet, you know, Moses just said, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Hmm. And ultimately, we know the story of the parting of the waters. It was beyond human capability. And you know, there's story after story after story like that throughout our history in the scriptures and of Israel and certainly of the church. And, you know, I take heart by that. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So we just have to rethink. We double down. We don't leave the battlefield.
Right.
We actually double down on the battlefield. And obviously we have to continue to pray, but we have to continue to fight. But we never get discouraged. We never go home. And, you know, in this particular situation, we're going to be working with a lot of different religious employers, not just churches, but schools, religious employers, even for-profit companies that are run or operated by people of faith, to make sure that they have the appropriate policies so that we can take advantage of pages 32 and 33 of this opinion with regards to the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act and other state laws regarding religious free exercise that protect individuals based upon, you know, what this court clearly said.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Kip calling from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Kip, you're on the air.
Thanks, Brother Jim, for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. My comment is this thing with the Supreme Court has been going on, this judicial activism, since at least the early 60s when they ruled Bible and prayer unconstitutional. My question is, well, I went to the library here not too long ago to find this, right, this has been driving me crazy. And I found a book on the Supreme Court, and I got to reading in it a little bit, and it says that the Supreme Court does not have the authority to enforce for its own rulings.
Right.
And I'm wondering, why doesn't anybody ever say anything about that? It drives me crazy. They don't have the final say. So that's my question.
Okay, thank you,
Kip.
Yeah, and that actually comes from Justice O'Connor in 1992 in the Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision. And she said that the Supreme Court doesn't even have the authority to enforce its own decisions, which is true. It has to be enforced by some other enforcer, the executive side of government, whether it's state or federal. And what she ultimately decided, what she was arguing about, is that even if Roe versus Wade, and this is her terms, even if it was wrongly decided, which it certainly was, she was advocating upholding it. Why? Because the only power that the court has, since it can't even enforce its own orders, and it can't make law like the legislature, is the confidence of the people that it's doing the right thing, interpreting the law. And if we make such a drastic decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, then they're going to lose confidence in us because we've made such a drastic decision to go away from Roe versus Wade. And so that was the basis of it. I mean, but it's very telling and true that the court doesn't even have authority to enforce its own orders. It's only the other branches of government, the executive particularly, that can do so.
Wow.
What can be done about that? I mean, can it be contested somehow, or?
Well, you know, early on, we had Thomas Jefferson was one of those advocates and others. Thomas Jefferson believed in certainly three coordinate branches of government like we all do, but he also believed strongly that each one took an oath to office, and the Supreme Court didn't have the kind of authority back then as it has now. We've just allowed it to get to where it is because we haven't challenged it like we should. And he said, you know, the executive has the obligation to interpret or uphold the Constitution. And if the court ultimately says something that's not consistent with the Constitution, the executive branch doesn't have the obligation to follow it. And so he argued forcefully to Abigail Adams. He says, how did you get the opinion that the judges have all the power to interpret the law? So he was a real strong advocate of each independent branch had its own separate authority to interpret the law, and they had to be checking and balancing each other if they got out of control.
Kip, thanks for the call. We're going next to Esther in Altamont, Kansas. You're on the air.
Yes, I've heard quite often that the judges cannot be removed. They're in there for life. But the Constitution does say the judges, both of supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their office during good behavior.
Right.
Now, if they're legislating from the bench, how in the world is that good behavior?
Well, good question. And if you had the people in the House and Senate that had enough votes, you'd be able to do it. The last judge that was actually impeached was Alcee Hastings. He's a judge down in Miami, Florida, federal district judge. He accepted some bribes regarding some case that was before him, and when it was found out, Congress did indict him in the House and convicted him in the Senate. He was removed. Then what did he do? Turned around and ran for office, and he's since then continued to be a U.S. House of Representatives for the Democratic Party. So that's the last one, and that was a couple of decades ago. But, yeah, you do have that authority. We just need people in the Congress to do the right thing.
So this would be Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives who have said, hey, wait,
right.
Court, you've gone too far on this issue. Matt, I don't see that happening.
No, I don't see that happening. I definitely don't see something like this happening in the House, because that's where you have to, just like we saw in the impeachment trial, you do the indictment, so to speak. That's where it starts in the House, and then you go over to the Senate for the actual conviction, and that's what they did in Alcee Hastings' case, and he was removed.
So, Esther, it comes down to this November's election.
Yeah,
well,
it really
I'll
does
be calling
come down
my
to
people.
The November
I do
election.
Anyway, but I will be calling them.
Thank you. Thank you,
thank
Esther.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
James, Tomah, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to bring to attention the questionable death of a Supreme Court justice not long back
Scalia?
Yes. And I just wanted to suggest that maybe there is some extortion going on. Maybe they're saying, hey, we did this to him. We can do this to you. So do as we say, or it's not going to go well for you.
Well, are you talking about have they been threatened? Is that what your question is?
I'm saying that I really think that's very highly probable. And what would your take be on that?
Okay, thank you.
I wouldn't, I have no evidence of that, and I wouldn't think that that's the case here. You never know about any situation. But, you know, in the situation here with Gorsuch, Gorsuch, you know, now when you go back and you look at his past history, he actually, like I said, he attended a very liberal Episcopalian church that was very pro-LGBT. He had some LGBT clerks that clerked with him. He was very open to that, and some of the people that knew him said that they're not surprised by this decision based upon what they know about him. In fact, this is a New York Times article that says longtime gay friends have said that they have always found him to be accepting of them and happy about who they are, which is, you know, that's different than becoming a judicial activist. So they said that, you know, they're not surprised about his ruling. But it's one thing to actually have certain, you know, acceptance and associations and other things. It's another thing to, unfortunately, allow those to cloud your job duty as a judge to interpret the statute. And that's unfortunately where Gorsuch went wrong. He allowed some of those associations outside of the court, perhaps even some inside the court with people that he had as clerks before, but he allowed those personal experiences to cloud his interpretation of a very clear statute, and that's where he is wrong.
James, thanks for the call. We're going to Carol in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on there, Carol.
Yes, good afternoon. Some time ago, President Trump ruled that transgender individuals would not be allowed in the military.
Right.
I'm wondering how this Supreme Court ruling would affect that.
It's going to affect it. In fact, he just finalized the rule last week, the same rule. That just came out, I think it was announced on Thursday or Friday, less than a week ago, and then on Monday this decision came down. So It's going to surely be challenged under this new ruling, and it may ultimately, you know, we don't know which way the courts will ultimately go on it, because this is military as opposed to employment, so there's a difference there. But, you know, at the same time, it's not on as strong footing now as it was last week.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
Thank you, Carol. Doug in Ringgold, Georgia, you're on the air.
Yes, concerning all this. Now, what about if a bunch of kind of people want to cause disturbance in the church and you ask them to leave? Will that cause a problem?
No, this is where the court at least gave one little ray of hope on pages 32 and 33 of this opinion, and that is that religious employers, churches, other religious employers, and I'm not just talking about nonprofits or churches or religious schools. I'm talking about religious employers. Like, remember, Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby is a commercial operation, very large company, and it won before the U.S. Supreme Court on the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act because the employers, the company itself, the management are Christians, and they want to operate their business that way. So they won using that. So even commercial companies, like even this funeral home, could have raised the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and it would have won. It actually won in the lower court, and the case was briefed and argued at the Court of Appeals, where they ultimately lost. But if they had raised the issue, unfortunately they didn't. And had they done it, they would have ultimately been the only victor coming out of this based on religious freedom.
Doug, thanks for the call from Georgia. Next to Ohio, Ashtabula, Ohio, and Gerald, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know, where is all the pastors listening on this program supporting Matt Staver? Where are the pastors? I'd like to hear from them. Where are they?
Thank you, Gerald. Indeed, Matt, this is an area where pastors, churches need to speak out loud and clear.
Yeah, they really do need to speak out loud and clear. Some, of course, they don't want to be perceived certain ways, and some are intimidated, and some just, we've seen pastors that have been just very silent on a number of things where they should actually be speaking out, and the more that they do that, the more these things become ingrained. They really need to actually find their calling and their voice, and really have courage to speak out on not only this issue, but other issues that come to our attention and affect our community and our nation.
And as we thank you, Gerald, for the call. And Matt, we have seen, look at, we saw Houston require pastors to pre-submit messages to them, and the trajectory we're on, we're going to be facing that as a nation once again. And it is important for the church to declare, thus saith the Lord.
Yeah, it really is important to declare this. I mean, at a time where we are a country that, we've been and we're still in this COVID lockdown, and so many people are suffering from that. We still have churches that are, operating under a very stringent 10-person limit, or even worse in some cases. And then we have all the racial divisions and the riots and the protests that's going on. It's a time for our country to be unified. It's a time for us to call upon God, and yet here we have the highest court in the country that not only affects us, but it'll affect other nations around the world as they look at this as an example, literally shaking its fist in the hand of our Creator.
We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more of your calls following the break. Matt Staver from Liberty Council, their site lc.org.
For worldviewreport.com, I'm Brandon House. So they're calling for ending police, defunding the police. Yes, there are some that want to do that. There are others that are more strategic. And what they're doing is they're pulling off the Hegelian dialectic process. Big fancy word. Just means opposites fighting each other. Those who want police, those who do not. Those who want Marxism, those who want a constitutional republic. Those who are saying, let's end the police, are now supporting, encouraging, directly or indirectly, looting and rioting and burning, which causes most Americans to say, are you kidding? We need the police now more than ever. So what happens? There is a meeting in the middle with people like Ilhan Omar and other Marxists and Islamists. And what they're openly calling for in their own document, known as the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement document, is neighborhood councils that oversee the police. And who do you think will sit on those? Marxists and Islamists. That's who will be overseeing your police. What kind of police do you think they'll hire? This is a Hegelian dialectic brainwashing operation.
Liberty Council is fighting on behalf of your religious rights. You can be in contact with them at lc.org, lc.org, or their phone number, 407-875-1776. That's 407-875-1776. Tim is calling from Mitchell, South Dakota. Tim, you're on the air.
I just want to say, how can man's court think that the old rule away God made us?
I'm sorry, one more time?
I just wanted to say, I don't see how the courts can overrule the way God made us.
How can a court overrule the way God made us?
Good question.
Good question.
And I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that we can't remake ourselves in our own image, and that's essentially what the court is putting into federal law by its wrong interpretation of Title VII.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tim. To West Dallas, Wisconsin, Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. I keep hearing people say this thing about how the Supreme Court has the job to interpret the Constitution. That's false. First of all, that gives them the power to misinterpret and even on purpose the Constitution, if they so wish to do. It gives what the Article 3 of the Constitution gives them is original jurisdiction in some cases and appellate jurisdiction in other cases. That's pretty much it. They're supposed to apply the law as written. And this decision, applying 1964 law to today, said absolutely nothing about transgenders.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking about, when I use the word interpret, I mean to apply the law. And when you do that, you got the law, it says this, and you apply it to the facts. And so that's how you integrate the facts to the law. But you can't change the law. The law is there. And there are mechanisms to amend the Constitution, and there's mechanisms to amend the statute that they're actually dealing with. And those mechanisms had been tried for 45 years, and Congress said no, 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 no. Every time for 45 years, it said no, we want to leave it exactly the way it was written in 1964. Now, 2020, six unelected individuals say, well, we think we know better, and we're going to interpret it differently. Well, they don't have the authority to do that. That is legislation from the bench rather than applying the law.
Yeah. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
Merle in Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that our founding fathers said that if the judicial starts to legislate, we're going to lose the republic.
And yeah, like they did. This, you know, I mean, Jefferson had a lot of words about that, that if we ever... He said that the seeds of dissolution of the republic lies in the judicial branch. And what he means by that is if we don't hold it in check and if they're not self-restrained, it can get out of control. And thus we see what we've experienced here in this decision and some of these other judicially activist decisions.
Hmm. Jim, I have one other comment if I may.
Sure.
If a nation like America turns its back on God, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Good point, Merle. We'll be closing with some thoughts on that. Janice, you're our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I think that Justice Gorsuch has conveniently forgotten the definition of love. If he is a Christian, he knows in 1 Corinthians 13 it says not to delight in evil, but to rejoice in the truth. Mm. So whoever defines the terms wins the argument.
Good point.
Thank you, Janice, for raising that issue here today. Matt, this whole issue, again, encourages us. It should be another eye-opener, again, how badly we are in need of prayer for our justices. We know that there's more decisions that are going to come down this month, some even impacting abortion. And it's really critical that we be in prayer for each of the justices as well as the lower courts that allow cases to get up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, a lot of these cases, you know, you only have about 80 or so cases that actually ever reach the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're talking about 8,000 or 9,000 cases every year that are requested for review. So most of these are actually being decided at the lower district court or at the Court of Appeals. And that's where President Trump has been making a lot of appointments there, and certainly two at the U.S. Supreme Court. We need to make more at the U.S. Supreme Court of people who understand the rule of law, but also at these other levels as well, because it makes a huge difference. I can tell you firsthand, having argued before these mm-hmm. different judges. It is different night and day between a judge who wants to just bypass the law and come up with his or her own opinion versus somebody who's going to be bound by the actual text and history and meaning of the law.
So the elections coming up here this November are a critical time for this nation as well.
Yeah, they're very critical. We have a DVD called Silence is Not an Option, and we have some information that if people want to get that out to their pastors and church leaders, I think it's really important that we're not silent, that pastors and church leaders do speak up on the biblical issues and then encourage people to vote biblical principles and vote Judeo-Christian values.
Matt, for pastors who'd like to get a copy of that, how can they do so?
They can go to our website, lc.org, and you can send us an email right there, or you can call us 407-875-1776, 407-875-1776. And also, by the way, we'll be talking to lots and lots of pastors and other religious employers about how you can develop policies to protect yourself and protect your sincerely held religious beliefs in light of this decision.
Yeah, and Matt, again, next week, or certainly by the end of June, an important case coming out on the topic of abortion.
Yeah, this is the case out of Louisiana, and this will be coming out. We filed an amicus brief in this case. It's about different clinic regulations and doctor privileges at the hospital and so forth. Our brief pointed out all the different injuries, even deaths that occur at these abortion clinics, and so we didn't represent Louisiana, but we filed an amicus brief. But that's a big case. It could come out on Monday. Certainly, we only have 2 weeks left in the term. The next 2 weeks, we're going to have a big decision on that.
And one final thing, Matt. We're down to about half a minute, but I just a fast update here. Churches you're representing in the state of Illinois on being open.
Yeah, well, there's no restrictions on churches right now. We just got a bad decision from the Court of Appeals there, but we also have a good decision from another Court of Appeals. This sets the case up for going back to the U.S. Supreme Court. I can tell you what, Jim, this case is far from over.
Hmm.
We're not going to stop until we get this across the country for all churches to have religious freedom.
And folks, you can stay informed at lc.org. That stands for Liberty Council, lc.org, or by contacting them at 407-875-1776. Matt, thank you so much for being with us here today on the broadcast.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And friends, thanks for tuning in here to Crosstalk, staying informed on critical issues. My, what a need for prayer across this nation in such a time as this. Let's be salt. Let's be light. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.